This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing employment law, but the particular area of pre-employment inquiries. What can and can't be asked by an employer in a pre-employment interview? We're going to find out a little bit about that. There's an awful lot to learn about it, but we will do the best we can. My guests are employment law attorneys Thomas Lenz, a partner in the Cerritos, California law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo. Mr. Lenz is also a member of the executive committee of the labor and employment law section of the State Bar of California. My other guest is Scott Stillman, an associate in the San Francisco law firm of McGuinn, Hilsman, and Pilepsky. Funding for your legal rights is made possible by the labor and employment law section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the family law section of the State Bar, and the lawyer referral service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Tom and Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chuck.
Really nice to have you with us. Tom, are you there?
I am here.
Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Good. You sound very good. You're down in which county?
L.A. County.
L.A. County. Good. All right. So our electronics are working well so far. Let's do this. Let's start with disabilities. Interestingly enough, I got an email very shortly after I mentioned that we were going to do this program. From one of the listeners who said he's a loyal listener to Your Legal Rights, and he said he would like to know what allowed questions there are concerning disability and service dogs in particular. And I wonder if you wouldn't mind starting with that kind of question.
Sure. This is Scott. And I'm going to kind of break that up into two parts, one being first, an employee, an applicant who goes into a job interview who doesn't have a disability that is obvious upon looking at you. And then, two, we'll tackle the service dog issue, which I think brings us onto the topic of what happens if your disability is more obvious and something the employer will notice immediately. If your disability is not obvious, an employer is not going to be allowed to ask a question such as, is your physical disability going to prevent you from doing this job? Now, on the flip side, a more appropriate question would be, are you able to perform the essential functions of what this job is? So if the employer has a list of what the job requirements are and asks that person, oh, can you perform these, that's an appropriate question.
And okay, so at that point, if the employee does have a disability which is not apparent to the employer, at that point the employee should reveal that he or she has a disability? Or what would you say about that, Tom?
Well, I think touching upon the points that Scott made, it's important for an employer to have consistent policies, practices, and in the case of disability-related inquiries, I think it's important that an employer have a good job description which lays out the duties for the position for which that business is hiring, and to review those duties with the applicant. Are you able to perform this duty? And the burden then is something that's going to shift to the applicant to say, yeah, I may need accommodation with this duty or that duty. So it's going to be important for the employer in what we refer to as an interactive process to work with that employee once the issue is raised and to find out what the employee is capable of doing with or without a reasonable accommodation.
And I think that's an important point that brings us on to the next question, which is, what if the disability is apparent off the bat?
What if, for example, the listener who sent me the email, he's come for the job interview, and here is his service dog with him? So that scenario, how is the employer to respond there?
Let's say that the service dog is to help somebody who is blind, and they come to the job for the interview. And at that point, I think it's obvious to the employer that this person may need accommodations, reasonable accommodations on the job. And in that situation, it'd be proper for the employer to ask narrowly tailored questions to the potential applicant about the essential functions that can be done with without reasonable accommodation. So do you need a computer that will read the text to you?
You mean and, orally?
It'll orally
read it to you, yeah.
Yeah, are you going to be, if that's one of the essential functions is to use a computer, maybe an accommodation for that person would be that type of program, in which case the person's going to be able to do the job just fine.
What if the employer who has not had experience in dealing with someone who has a disability where a service dog is required, can the employer say, how often will you need to take your dog outside for the dog to be able to urinate, etc.? Is that a proper question? Is that an appropriate question to ask?
This is Tom. I think it is because...
Yeah, and Tom, let me interrupt for just a moment. You principally represent employers, just so that the audience knows, and Scott exclusively represents employees. So, Tom, excuse my interruption, but I think it was important to let them know. Go ahead, Tom.
Certainly. In the case of a service animal, the employee may well have a right to have a service animal if that accommodation is reasonable. That's going to be a fact-driven analysis, looking at the duties, the workplace, the animal, and a variety of things. So there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all answer. But I think assuming that a service animal is allowed in that workplace, it is going to be the employee's responsibility to ensure that the animal is not disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
And that the animal is able to relieve itself in a way that does not affect the workplace. So I think that it will be a permissible inquiry, although there is a certain lack of guidance from, say, the EEOC to deal with the details of this.
How are employers at this point, Tom, how are they educated in terms of what can be asked, what can't be asked? Is there any law that we, or laws that we have, whether it's California law or federal law, where there is required training of employers with regard to what you can and can't ask of employees, whether it's disabilities or protected categories, et cetera?
Well, when it comes to disability, there is no training obligation. And I think what we find is a mix of, I would say, well-informed and not so well-informed employers with these issues. For that matter, many other of the protected categories in the employment arena. Mm-hmm. And that's to be distinguished from, say, sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
The state, with AB 1825, imposed an actual requirement for training every 2 years for supervision.
Yeah, that's mandatory under California law?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Scott. I mean, so much of this, I think, comes down to employer by employer, and some employers have a more developed HR department than other employers, and having people who are trained at your job to know about what questions are permissible and what aren't is a really valuable thing and can really help both the employee and the employer.
Okay, let's move on because I want to make sure that you cover the major categories, subcategories that you wanted to cover in this, certainly the half-hour portion, statewide portion of the program. The next area you wanted to talk about is protective categories. We haven't touched yet about, of course, age, pregnancy, religion, et cetera. Would you talk about this, please, and what can and can't be asked? And what about age? Obviously, if someone comes in and he or she looks like they're well over 55, obviously an employer is going to know, all right, this person's obviously over 55. What can or cannot an employer in a pre-employment interview ask about age?
Well, this is Scott, and
Because the prospective employee may dye his or her hair, and of course that would make a difference.
Right. No, definitely. I think.
Do you dye your hair?
Right, exactly. I don't know. You can't ask that right now.
Oh, too bad.
I think examples are helpful, and so much of this, because of course it comes down to being in a legal context, and so much of the law is about words, and so the actual language really matters for all these questions. Literally the words used can make a huge impact on whether or not this is going to be found legal and whether or not it's illegal. So for age, a question like, how old are you? That's going to be...
That's verboten.
Yeah.
Verboten?
Exactly.
Okay.
But a question like, are you over the age of 18? That's going to be allowed because we have laws protecting child labor, and one of the laws is you got to be over 18 to work. Mm-hmm. So that is going after more of it captures an age range as opposed to actually asking for your exact age.
Mm-hmm. Tom, what thoughts do you have? Do you do any training of your clients, your employer clients, or anyone in your firm do that?
Yes, we spend a lot of time in our firm, and you know, I do as well, on what we consider preventative work. In other words, training, educating employers so that they don't get it wrong. We want to avoid disputes as much as possible. And then when the cases are filed, of course we need to defend them. But we definitely believe prevention is better than cure.
How do you instruct your employers with regard to the issue of age? If someone appears to be, let's say, to the employer, visibly, let's say, over the age of 55, and I'm just arbitrarily using that, what can or cannot the employer say with respect to if the prospective employee says, do you have, Mr. So-and-so, do you have a problem with someone who may be over the age of 50? Now, a prospective employee may ask that question. How do you train your employers about this?
Well, I think when we talk to employers, it's in some sense like what we talked about with disability. It's really important to focus on the nature of the job, the key duties, and to focus on the questions you really need an answer to ascertain whether this person will or will not be able to perform the job. The age discrimination laws kick in at the age of 40 under both federal and state law, and it's just dangerous ground to even touch on age. It's amazing what we see, though, in practice, because the uninformed employers may be faced with the claim will baffle us with some of the things they ask.
Chuck, this is Scott. If I could kind of follow up on that, and it goes back to what you said when you started this portion about age, is if somebody comes in and they're 55 and look 55, then it can be, age could be used against them, and it's never talked about. And that's what makes so many of these pre-employment inquiry cases so tough, is that a lot of times you just don't have any evidence on your side, because
you can't look inside the brain of the prospective employer as to what he or she is thinking.
Because this all comes down to what is the motivation on the side of the employer around that hiring decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so these can be really tough cases to bring because you don't have a lot there. Compare that to somebody who is working there as an employee, and at that point, they might have access to emails and have had conversations with people that
learning
would provide
that
evidence.
The employer is concerned about the fact that I'm 49 or 50 years old.
Correct. Yeah, in an age case, say, where you
and
were
all
terminated.
The other kids, all the other kids who are 25, 30, 35, etc., are a lot younger. I'm the old one there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me throw this at you. What if we have a relatively young woman who, let's say, is married? She comes for an interview, and the employer, whatever the job may be, it's important to have someone who the employer feels will have stability over a period of time. What can an employer ask or not ask with respect, do you plan to get pregnant? And or do you have any kids? And if you have any kids, what are their ages, etc.? What can, Tom, your employers, if you've been instructing them, what can or can't they ask about?
That is something where I think an employer needs to steer clear of questions about marital status, children. Mm-hmm. I think the emphasis needs to be on that job for which the employer is hiring, and to say, these are the duties, can you perform them? These are the hours of work. Can you work those hours? And to, I think, try to pin down the details that way by focusing on what is really critical for the job to be performed. And if there is some issue then with job duties or with scheduling or something, and there is no flexibility on that for the employer, that person may not be a fit. But as long as that candidate is indicating that they can satisfy the job and the schedule, then I think the employer has to deal with the fact that this person, like so many other people, has children, may have more, people have lives to lead, and different things happen in their families.
Let me just interrupt both of you for a minute. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program focusing on the very important area of employment law, pre-employment inquiries, what can and can't be asked by an employer in a pre-employment interview. My guests are two experienced employment law attorneys, Scott Stillman and Thomas Lenz. Scott is an associate in the San Francisco law firm of McGuinn, Hilsman, and Pilevsky. Tom Lenz is a partner in the Cerritos, California law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rude, and Romo. He's also a member of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. If you are able to listen to us for the full hour live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.klw.org, we will be giving the local phone number in a few minutes, and you'll be able to call in and ask a question, whether you are local or whether you are anywhere else in the state of California, because we are talking about California law. Let me come back to you for just a moment in the area of the protective categories. What about religion? What can or cannot? What if a man comes in for a particular interview and he's got a beard or he has a particular type of suit or clothing that he wears that may have some religious significance? What can or cannot an employer ask?
Well, this is Scott. I think it goes back a lot to what Tom talked about earlier regarding questions that actually relate to the job itself and what needs to be done to accomplish that job. So, for instance, if a permissible question would be, these are the shifts that need to be worked, and some of those involve working on weekends and holidays. Can you work the shifts that we need in order for the job to be done? Versus, does your religion prevent you from working on weekends or certain holidays? That latter question would not be allowed. So I think it really comes down to questions that, are they just really pretext for discrimination? Mm-hmm. Are they pretext for just trying to figure out what this person's religion is? Or is it really more about trying to figure out truly if they can do the job that they've applied for?
What comments, Tom, do you have?
I agree. Again, it's so important to tailor the questions to the specific job. And everyone is going to have different points of view and beliefs and observances that they follow. And I think that if you're able to hone in on, are you able to be here at this time and this schedule and to perform these duties, that is going to, I think, be a far better way to get through the application process than to ask about people's religious practices or if their religion will affect their ability to do the job.
What if the prospective job involves someone dealing a great deal with the public? and the employer is concerned that if a prospective employee, a male, wears a beard, that that may turn off some of the prospective customers of the business. Now, the employer is not going to say, I presume, are you willing? And let's say that the beard has some religious significance for the employee. I'm assuming that the employer under California law is not able to ask the employee, are you willing to shave your beard? Tom?
I think that that's going to be a dangerous inquiry for the employer.
Okay.
And the employer is going to need a business necessity, something that truly links that requirement to successful performance of the job and completing the employer's business mission. And absent that, I think there's a higher risk of it being illegal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's go on, if you would, to criminal backgrounds. What can or cannot be asked with respect to someone perhaps being arrested but not being convicted of, let's say, smoking marijuana?
Go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. So in California, under California law, you cannot ask about arrests. So have you ever been arrested? That would not be a permissible question.
And that cannot be on a form. You can't have. All right.
Yeah,
whether it's an oral question or a written question. Okay, go ahead.
And you can ask about convictions, but only convictions within the last 7 years. So you can't go back farther than that. Now, there are certain types of exceptions depending upon what job you're applying for. If it was law enforcement, or let's say you're applying for a job with a healthcare provider and you're going to have access to medications, then you can be allowed to ask a potential applicant about their arrest record as far as drug-related charges.
And we're talking about now, are we talking about now both misdemeanors as well as felonies or felonies, the more serious crimes?
It's convictions on felonies or misdemeanors.
Really? Okay.
Now, you mentioned that these questions might be on a box on an application.
Yes.
And I think that's really an important point to make, is prospective applicants should be very careful not to lie on applications,
because mm-hmm.
you can absolutely be terminated for lying on an application. So be very careful about that. But at the same time, read the application very carefully, because a lot of applications will say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? So if you've been convicted of a misdemeanor, it's not a lie to say, no, I haven't been convicted of a felony.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to really read those carefully mm-hmm. and answer the question correctly.
Mm-hmm. In your experience, Tom, on the written questionnaires of employers, do they include a box saying, have you ever been convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony, or is it usually one or the other?
I have seen both.
But typically,
when that comes up, it has to do with felonies.
Okay. All right. And why is it that what's the basis of the 7 year? You can't go back more than 7 years. Where is that? Is that California law?
Pretty sure that's the labor code.
The labor. Okay,
yeah.
California labor code. All right.
Yeah, it is. A very helpful resource when it comes to criminal backgrounds and employment applications is the National Employment Law Project,
mm-hmm.
NELP. And if you go to NELP.org, they have an abundance of resources that can talk you through ways to properly answer questions, and then mm-hmm. also things you can do regarding your criminal background as far as potentially getting past convictions dismissed, or sometimes people use the word expunged. So it's a very helpful resource.
So if you want to go to Google and you put in National Employment Law Project, this is what we're talking about.
Correct. Yeah, Google National Employment Law Project and go to their criminal background section,
mm-hmm.
and it's a tremendous resource.
Let me ask you to go on to, at this point, because we are now maybe 5 minutes left of the statewide version of the program. What about drug testing? What can an employer do or not do with respect to that? Prospective employer, pardon me.
This is Tom. An employer does have a right in the pre-employment setting to require a drug test. And the case law has basically distinguished the privacy rights of applicants versus existing employees. And when it comes to pre-employment, the employer doesn't know this applicant, and this is part of the getting-to-know-you process, to have that test and to determine whether there is any issue there that might preclude employment.
What comments do you have about that, Scott?
The whole drug testing case law really comes out of the California Constitution says you have an inalienable right to your privacy. And so the question comes down to, is drug testing, is that going too far? Is that invading your privacy too much? And like Tom said, he's exactly right. The case law has said there's a distinction between the applicant and the an actual employee who's there. And so drug testing for applicants has been found to be a reasonable invasion of somebody's privacy.
If someone has a recommendation from a medical doctor to use marijuana in whatever form it may be, smoking or eating or whatever, for a medical reason, obviously, if there's drug testing, it's going to show, I presume, that there is marijuana in this person's system. Now, how is the employee supposed to respond when the employee realizes, all right, I'm going to be drug tested? How should the employee respond, Scott?
Well, it's an interesting question, because if it's something that has been prescribed to you by a doctor, then all of a sudden now you're into this field of disability law.
Okay, so we go back to the disability law. We have, I'm sorry to tell you, we have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who will be able to listen to us for an hour, please stay with us. All right, it is 7:27, just slightly, or actually 7:28. What am I saying? My goodness. At 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. And we just don't have enough time to cover everything. It goes much too quickly. Here's our number, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you have a question, a comment, a concern, whether you are an employee, a prospective employee, whether you're an employer of currently employees in your business, or of prospective employees, please join us with your question, your comment, your concern, 1-415-841-4134. And before we take any calls, let me just mention that support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should get a live person on the phone, hopefully. And pardon me, tell them what you have the problem with. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney. And throughout the state of California, with minor exception, for a half an hour consultation, the charge will range between $25 to $35. That does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that service going, which is an outstanding public service on the part of bar associations throughout California. So keep that in mind should you need that. If you've joined us in the last few minutes, this is Chuck Finney, my guest, talking about what can and cannot be asked by an employer in a pre-employment interview. If you have questions going beyond that in the employment law area, please don't worry. My guests are very experienced in this. Tom Lenz is a partner in a Los Angeles County law firm. He's a member of the executive committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section. He exclusively represents employers. My other guest with me in the studio is Scott Stillman. His office is in San Francisco, and he exclusively represents employees. So I hope you will join us, and we've got McGill. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make a comment about you're saying a doctor's prescription. That's wrong. There's only a doctor's recommendation for medical marijuana.
Yes.
That won't absolve you from a positive drug test.
No, of course. Of course. Okay.
But there is no prescription for marijuana currently, but there is a recommendation. Based on a recommendation, you can get a permit to purchase medical marijuana at a dispensary.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it does.
Okay. All right. Well, McGill, thank you very much for clarifying that and correcting me on that.
No problem.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. All right. Before we take our next call, let me mention a couple of things coming up for you, in case you're interested. The San Mateo County Law Library does regular lectures, and one that's coming up, which will be actually on Thursday, March 20th, that's coming up actually a week from tomorrow, and that will be on your rights and responsibilities as a landlord. It's at noon. You can bring your own lunch. It's in Redwood City at the San Mateo County Law Library across the street from the Hall of Justice. If you are interested in this and want to find out more information, let me give you the phone number for the San Mateo County Bar Association, San Mateo County Law Library, 650-363-4913. Also, this month, actually a week later in the evening, Thursday evening, March 27th, the San Mateo County Law Library will be doing a presentation on immigration. Know your rights as an immigrant, and if you're interested, that same number, and that starts at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. That same number you can call for more information, 650-363-4913. And then a very significant free presentation on March 22nd, which is going to be actually about a week and a half from now at noon. Will be if you're having problems as a renter, if you are a homeowner trying to hang on to your home, if you have a credit reporting or debt collection problem. Four of the very significant nonprofit organizations are making a presentation on this on March 22nd from 10 a.m. to noon at the San Mateo Library, which is in the city of San Mateo. And if you would like to know more about that, let me give you a phone number so that you can inquire about it. It's 510-271-8443, 510-271-8443, extension 307. And that's for March 22nd. All right, we've got Trish. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm a vocational rehab counselor, and so I deal with a lot of people who have legal issues looking for employment. And one of the things you just mentioned, that they don't have to, they can't be asked anything beyond 7 years of. And so how do you deal with it on the application? If it says, have you ever had a felony? You say no, because it was set more than 7 years ago.
That's a very good question, Trish. Tom, how do you deal with that?
I think that's an application that needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, if I saw that application from an employer client of mine, as I sometimes do when I review policies and forms, that would be one of the changes I would recommend they make.
Okay, that they would say on it that have you been convicted of a felony in less than 7 years?
Correct.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever seen an application like that. I know there's some second chance employers where you don't have to declare anything until
mm-hmm.
you get to the interview, but I don't think I've seen an application with that.
Yeah.
But the other question.
I think that is a function of many employers ordering their employment forms off of the internet, or buying them at business supply stores where I think many people try to market these sorts of products on a national basis. And when the law varies from state to state, it can actually be quite dangerous.
Yeah, what would you suggest somebody does in that circumstance?
Well, to follow up on that, Trish, this is Scott.
Yeah.
There are certain penalties and potential damages attached to employers who do violate this law and ask for records that go back farther than 7 years. And that's it basically comes down to what your actual damages are or $10,000, whichever is greater. And there's a potential for recovery of attorney's fees and punitive damages. So that would be a situation where you could talk to an employment lawyer. Additionally, if you feel that you've been discriminated against in the employment application process, and this is something that really applies to everything we've been talking about, and it's an important point is, like Trish asked, I mean, what do you do if you feel like there's been a violation here, if you feel you've been discriminated against? Well, there's the there's agencies such as the EEOC and the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, the DFEH, that you can file a claim with. Explain that you feel that you've been discriminated against in the application process. So those are kind of some remedies that you have available.
So what if you just say, since you know the employer shouldn't be asking for more than 7 years and you had it 20 years ago, what if you just say no? Are you lying because the employer has asked you an incorrect question?
Tom, what do you say about that?
I think that that's potentially perilous for the employer to rely on. I think an employer is certainly entitled to honesty when dealing with an applicant, and provided that the inquiry deals with, you know, something that is truly job-related and something allowed by law. But if the employer is going to hold an employee responsible for something beyond what the employer is allowed to inquire, that's trouble.
Trouble for the employer.
That's correct.
So
are to wipe each other out. Like if the employee says no, and the employer finds out they said no, but they said, but you didn't ask the right question, you didn't ask it correctly, therefore they cancel each other out, nobody's wrong?
Well, I think the employer is going to be in a risky situation if they rely on that.
So in other words, there could be... if the employer fired the employee on that basis,
right.
You're saying, if I may, Tom, at this point, you're saying the employee then would have a basis for a decent, unlawful termination of employment lawsuit against the employer. Are you saying that?
I am, because I think that might be a violation of the public policy behind the law saying 7 years.
Yeah, it would seem to me, too, in terms of just what the law is providing for the protection of the employee. Trish, thank you for your good questions. What are you?
I had one other question.
Oh, my goodness, you're really ready. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you may have answered it because I turned the radio down, but it was about marijuana. Because I just had somebody who was on medical marijuana and was not allowed to actually even go through the process because he told them about it. And they said it didn't count. They had to have some special kind of prescription.
But you can't get a special kind of prescription, as I understand it. According to McGill, he says you can have a doctor's recommendation, but you can't have, you don't get a prescription.
Oh, okay. That's what you were just saying.
That's what at least the caller said. Tom, how are your employers dealing with this?
This is an area that has employers really concerned, because on one hand, you have the state allowing medical marijuana, but on the other hand, the employer has a duty to perform work safely, and many times there are concerns, particularly in the industrial setting or construction, that an employee who is under the influence is going to create a safety hazard, and that could well create a number of issues. And so employers are, I think, many times trying to protect themselves against having people under the influence in their workplace.
And do you agree with our first caller, McGill, saying that you can't get a prescription from a doctor? That's not the case. You can get a recommendation. Do you agree that that's generally what the situation is in California at this time?
I believe so.
Okay.
And I want to follow up on some of the marijuana stuff here. personal use convictions are automatically erased from a defendant's record after 2 years,
mm-hmm.
In which case the employee who's applying for the job would not have to say that they had been convicted.
Ah, okay.
So there's certain convictions that can be dismissed under Penal Code 1203.4, but marijuana there's a labor code section actually that says the employer cannot ask about marijuana convictions that are more than 2 years old.
Ah, okay. All right. Trish, thank you very much for your questions.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Haiti, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I'm really going to ask a theoretical question. What if the person applying for a job has a service dog for mental health reasons?
Mm-hmm.
How is that dealt with from the point of view of the employer? Can he or she ask what the mental health condition is? Can he or she not? How is that handled?
That's a very good question. Stay with us, Haiti, because this
sure.
is very, very significant. Tom, how would you like your employers to deal with this?
I would like the employer to pay close attention to the work duties and the work setting, and how will this individual be able to perform the duties? How will this service animal assist in performance of the duties? And whether it's a mental disability, a physical disability, those answers are going to be different every time. But I think it's going to be important to gather an understanding of how this animal helps the employee in performance of the job.
Yeah, to follow up on that, Tom, I think that a lot of it comes back to what we mentioned before as far as are these questions getting in deep into mental health of that applicant, or are these questions limited to how the person can perform these essential functions of the job? So there's a real distinction there between the going down the direction of what are your mental health issues versus going down the direction of how is a service dog helpful in performing the essential functions.
Absolutely.
Okay, Haiti?
Thank you.
You all right with that?
Yes and no. I mean, what if the potential employee says, I have been diagnosed with anxiety disorder,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and the dog is there in order to mitigate that disorder. So the employer knows that the person has
anxiety
more than the usual or run-of-the-mill anxieties mm-hmm. and needs this dog for that purpose. And I know this is a little bit...
No, that's fine. No, I think it's good. Now, one of the things that I want you to understand here, Haiti, is that my guests are not permitted to give specific legal advice.
I know.
You know, because that's not...
No, I'm not asking
okay.
for a particular
I know,
individual.
I know. I just want to make it very clear.
No.
Tom, with respect to Haiti's last question, what comments do you have about that? Where she has told the employer, I have anxiety. My pet here, my dog, assuming it's a dog, is here to help me in dealing with my anxiety that I have, unfortunately. How do you recommend to your employers to deal with something like this?
I would engage in the interactive process that we made reference to earlier, where the issue's on the table. The applicant or employee has raised it, and you ask the question, what is it you need? What do you propose?
Mm-hmm.
And you can ask, how will this accommodation, I'll call it, help you? And
the accommodation of the service dog.
That's correct. Because it's all about essential functions of the job. Can the employee do it with or without an accommodation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here's the dog. The employee explains that, and the employer then assesses that to see what is workable in the workplace. And again, it's going to turn on the details, but if it is something that is going to interfere with the workplace, the employer, you know, may raise the defense of an undue hardship if the issue is burdensome. If that proposed accommodation is burdensome for the employer may say, well, I don't need to do that, but I can do something less than that.
Okay. All right. Well, Haiti, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling.
For me, I work with people who have these.
No, thank you very much for your question. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Okay. All right. Bill, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, I'm a contract worker, and I do like a lot of interviews, and one time someone asked me what year I graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like kind of...
How old are you?
I graduated in 1975. So if you figure that the typical person is about 22 when he graduates from college, you would conclude I was about 60 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so I, you know, he asked me, and I've been told not to lie, so I told him.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't get the job. So.
And you think, and Bill, if I may interrupt for a moment, you think that the reason you didn't get the job was because you were so upfront, and the prospective employer assumed that you are 60 years of age or whatever it was, and therefore discriminated against you because of your age.
Well, you know, the hiring process is pretty opaque. You know, they'll just say, well,
sure,
we decide to hire someone else. So I can't really say one way or another. I'm just asking, you know.
Okay. Let me see if I... Bill, let me get some comments about this question. When did you graduate from college? If you would, Scott, please.
I think that that's an inappropriate question.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that is absolutely pretext for trying to figure out the person's age.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that was an appropriate question.
Yeah.
And because just as Bill explained, it is very easy to figure out somebody's age, or, you know, at least ballpark it from the year they graduated college.
Sure.
So,
but what year did you graduate from high school?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Where'd you go?
Yeah.
Where'd you go? What year were you there? Yeah. Yeah.
And so in this scenario, I think that that's inappropriate. And now, unfortunately, like Bill said, the hiring process, it's opaque, and you don't have necessarily the evidence you need to really prove a case here. And I think that comes back to really talking about there's the legal side of this, and then there's the practical side.
Mm-hmm.
So the legal side, I mean, let's say they had asked Bill just straight up, how old were you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, slam dunk legal case. Well, then you got to look at the practical side and say, is it worth it to bring a lawsuit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother conversation there, but it really is going to come down to what his prospective damages would be for not having gotten that job,
mm-hmm.
and when he gets his next job.
Well, let me pose this question to both of you then, in light of what Bill has come up with. If the employer, prospective employer, had said, how old are you? And Bill, because he's a real honest guy, said, I'm 60 years of age. Or the employer said, as Bill had said, what year did you graduate from college? And Bill said 1975, which made him around 60. And Bill believes that he has been discriminated against because of his age, which is not out of the question for Bill to
right.
realize, hey, this prospective employer has discriminated against me. So in terms of the practicalities of this, Tom, what thoughts do you then have with respect to Bill, who has not gotten the position because he's been asked inappropriate questions? Now, certainly the employer, prospective employer, by looking at someone, could probably guesstimate that person's age without even asking, how old are you? What year did you graduate from college? So what would you say, since you represent employers, Tom, what would you say the potential for Bill pursuing a viable case for discrimination?
I think that's going to depend on the employer's practices and policies. When we're faced with discrimination allegations, be it a claim, a demand, a lawsuit, I want to look at how the employer's process works for hiring. I want to know what their intake has been on applications for the position Bill is seeking. and to review the candidates who applied and were interviewed, and as well as the ones who were hired, to see is there truly an issue there.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, I want to prove that the employer would have taken the same action in hiring who he hired, not hiring who he didn't hire, for legal reasons, lawful business need, rather than some sort of inappropriate criteria.
Mm-hmm. And this is Scott. Bill would have basically should use the time stamp of a 1 year to bring this case, if he came to the Department of Fair Employment and Housing to file that discrimination claim. So a practical side of this, going back to that practical side, is if you're a prospective employee who just got denied a job and now you're trying to find the next job, the unfortunate reality is it's not very helpful to have a lawsuit on file and that you're suing an employer. Now, that said, you have a year to bring that case. Let's say it's a slam dunk, no question. The employer violated the law. You have a year to bring the case. So I think oftentimes the best move is to try to find that next job, get that secured, and then, you know, you can try to go forward and get your legal remedies for that violation of the law. But at least you get the next job first. You protect yourself a little bit because having a lawsuit on file when you're trying to get the next job is not a good place to be.
How would the next prospective employer find out that Bill had a lawsuit on file with the DFEH, Department of Fair Employment and Housing? How would the employer know that? Prospective employer, the next one, that is.
Well, it'd be hard to find out that a claim was filed with the DFEH, mm-hmm. but if you go through the DFEH process and you get a right to sue letter, for
yes.
instance, and then you get a lawyer to bring that case into court. Once you file in court, that's a public record. And it used to be that an employer would have to kind of go down to the courthouse mm-hmm. and request the paper mm-hmm. copy. Now so much of this is online.
So you can just
going to be as easy as Googling it. That's mm-hmm. probably not going to show up. We haven't seen that yet, but employers have background checks that they do. They use third-party companies mm-hmm. that look up and have access to the public filings database, and that is where potentially your name is going to come up. So it's an unfortunate reality, because you could have the most righteous case in the
mm-hmm.
world,
mm-hmm.
But it's still going to be something an employer thinks twice about as they look for the next hire.
Bill, did you get another job somewhere?
Yes, I did, and good. I figured it wasn't worth the trouble of going to sue them, because, you know, I was in a room with the guy that was interviewing me, and no one else heard it, so basically it's my word against him.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, and I've talked to job counselors, and they say if that ever happens again, just ask the interviewer, how does that question relate to this job, or, you know, mm-hmm. something like that, and then basically just don't steer the question away and don't answer them.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you very much for calling. We have just a very few minutes left. If you have a question, a comment, or concern that you would like to pose to my guests, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. I just want to alert you, by the way, our next Call a Lawyer night will be actually on the 26th of this month, 2 weeks from this evening. And if you listen to the program live, or if you don't even listen to the program live, you're invited to call in for Call a Lawyer. The State Bar President will be my guest, Luis Rodriguez, that evening, talking about issues that he is working on with the State Bar of California. But aside from the on-air program, we will have several attorneys here at the station on the 800 number where you can call in and ask questions, talk with an attorney off the air. It's a great public service these attorneys are performing. Again, that's March 26th, and that number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. We are coming. Go ahead, Scott, please.
I just wanted to follow up on something Bill mentioned, that it was just him and the other person in in the room.
Yes.
And so he didn't feel like he kind of necessarily had any type of evidence on his side. And we've talked about evidence being tough to gather in these pre-employment situations. But one thing I would suggest to people is to take notes. You know, write down some notes afterwards or even during the interview process if you feel like things are going down a path that you feel are inappropriate. At least you have taken some notes, and if it does unfortunately go down the legal path, you have some evidence that you could produce.
Let me ask you both one of the final questions I have for you. In the case of Bill being asked by the prospective employer, what year did you graduate from college? And he said 1975. What if the question was asked and Bill said, I believe that that's an improper question, and I don't wish to ask, I don't wish to answer it. Tom, how do you feel that would affect your employers who you're trying to train?
I think that, you know, some employers may be put off by that.
That's what I was a bit concerned about, yeah.
Yeah, but the fact is Bill's right.
Yeah.
And if he says that's an inappropriate question, I think the employer needs to do some homework and maybe call counsel if they are, you know, having any concerns about that, and they need to make sure that they're not relying upon his failure to answer a question in as dispositive in determining whether to hire him. I think that as a general matter, employers are well advised to look for holes in candidates' applications, resumes, answers to questions, but it definitely cannot be something that is an illegal question that they rely on.
And in this situation, even if Bill refused to answer it, obviously that would not be enough evidentiary basis upon which Bill could bring some kind of a file a complaint with the DFEH or proceed further. And is that, from a practical standpoint, correct?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've come to the end of the program. I want to thank you both very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Great to have you here. We probably should do another program. We've only, I think, touched the tip of the iceberg. My attorney friends and guests have been Thomas Lenz, partner in the Cerritos Law Firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rude, and Romo. Mr. Lenz is also a member of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. My other guest is Scott Stillman, an associate in the San Francisco law firm of McGuinn, Hillsman, and Pulaski. Thank you both very much.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members, our program engineer, very nice to have Kevin Vance with us. Yippee, Kevin. Thank you very much for joining us. Also, I've been assisted by Martin McLean, my production assistant. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, if you are a small business owner or run a small business, we're going to be talking about legal issues confronting small business owners and small businesses. My guests will be business law attorneys Sandra McNabb, Laura Drossman, and David Finkelstein. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights in our 31st year on the air. I'm Chuck Vinnie.